Hey everyone, welcome to this workshop today. The speaker is going to speak for an hour, and then we're going to take questions and answers. So that'll be around 10:05, I guess, so 11:05. Take some questions and answers, and I'm now going to. Arlen is our speaker today, and the topic is from the Big Book, How It Works. And Arlen, I'll let you take it from here so we save time.
Thank you very much, Claire. Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for all the work that you did to organize this. I want to thank every single person who both attends and who has done service for this magnificent workshop. This is just quite a unbelievable thing. When I was new in OA, I never envisioned a time where I would be going to meetings with people in different states, different countries, different continents. It's just an unbelievable reality today, and I thank God for bringing us all together this morning, that's for sure. We're going to look at how it works this morning, and what we're going to do as best we can is give you a little bit of history behind it as we move through the chapter. And at the same time, what I'd like to do, one of my big goals this morning, is to clear up some of the mysteries, some of the myths in steps 3 and 4. How it works is going to concern itself with steps 3 and 4. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at this chapter. Okay, it was December of 1938, just 5 months before the book was printed. The book was printed on April 10th, 1939. And in December of 1938, the steps and the program of action had not yet been codified. They had not been put down. The first 4 chapters were written. Bill's story was not originally chapter 1. Doctor's opinion was chapter 1 in the first edition. Then it was moved, and the reason it was moved is Dr. Silkworth was not an alcoholic, and they wanted the book to be for alcoholics by alcoholics, so they moved him to the Roman numeral section. And a guy by the name of Uzzle, he came into Tom Uzzle. He was the editor of the book, him and Janet Blair. And Uzzle moved Bill's story from the story section before printing. He moved it to be chapter 1, or at that time 2, because he wanted Bill's story to give the reader identification. So he not only chopped down a lot of what Bill had written for his story, but he also moved it to chapter 2 at that time, and then it became chapter 1. But our concentration this morning is on how it works. Let's look at the chapter, let's go through the chapter, and in the time we have, let's do everything we can to help to amplify an understanding of these 2 most misunderstood steps, 3 and 4. Page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Let's stop right there for just a second. Thoroughly followed our path. I've never seen anyone fail who has followed our path. It is just not something that I have seen, and I've been around for 44 years. Just to qualify for you, I came into this program February 2nd, 1979. I struggled for a while. I have 24 years of abstinence. I've lost a little over 500 pounds in that time. I came in at 500 pounds. I came back at 600 pounds. I got up to 700 pounds. I am now in the 2s. I'm 107 pounds less than when I graduated high school in 1972 from Mather High School in Chicago. I'm 107 pounds less than I was as a senior in high school by the grace of God and the fellowship of this magnificent program. Okay, so those are my statistics. That's the back of my baseball card, as it were. When we were kids, I don't know, we turn over the baseball card and you get the player's statistic. Those are my statistics. All right. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. For me, I've never seen it. Anyone who thoroughly does this is going to recover. It's an inevitability. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Now, let's take a look at this word honesty, and this word or this concept of honesty is going to appear three times in this one paragraph. So let's take a look at that. What is he talking about here when he talks about honesty? Is he talking about what? Now, the easy answer is, what do I have to be honest about? And the easy answer is everything. That's a very simple answer. Let's take a look at what he's really delving at. He wants us to be honest about this. Am I, based on the first four chapters of this book, by the conclusions of steps one and two, am I, in my own opinion, a compulsive overeater? And if the answer is yes, I am, then the only thing I can do at this point is to work this program, because there is no earthly solution to this malady. There is money won't fix it. Nothing will fix it. We'll get in a little bit to that when we get to the ABCs on page.
Harlan, can you slow a little?
I'll do the best I can, Claire. Okay. I'll do the best I can. There's no earthly solution to this malady. So I have to be honest with myself and say, yes, based on these chapters, I am indeed one of you. Let's continue. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And if I'm totally honest with myself, then based on these chapters, once again, I have come to a conclusion that I have an allergy of the body and a twist of the mind that condemn me to eating against my will, to eating against my self-interest. And all I wanted to do was be thin, but all I did was eat. And that just doesn't make sense. But addiction doesn't make cerebral sense. It's defiant of any kind of sense. Let's continue. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Once again, this honesty is going to be calling us back to, am I a compulsive overeater or am I not a compulsive overeater? And it is a self-diagnosing disease. Let's continue. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. When he talks about the stories, he is bringing us back to the heavy influence of one of the books that was very instrumental in the formation of this book. It was a book by William James, and it was based on a series of lectures in Edinburgh, Scotland, of psychologists. And there was a meeting in 1901, and there was a man there, William James, who listened to these stories and wrote a book in 1903, and it was called The Varieties of Religious Experience. And in this book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, which was very widely read by Oxford Group members at that time, William James presented in this book a series of stories where people described in their own words what they were like, what happened. Usually it was catastrophic. It was always catastrophic. And then what they're like now. Based on this book, we have the stories in the back of the big book of what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And that's one of the books that framed the book, was The Varieties of Religious The Variety of Religious Experience. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Let's take a look at what we just wrote. What we just read, sorry. If you've decided you want what we have, What is it we seem to have that you want? Why did you tune into this Zoom meeting today? Why did you go to meetings for the longer time, the longest time? Well, here's what we seem to have. Now, people say, well, there's a bunch of compulsive overeaters there. Well, there's compulsive overeaters at Dunkin' Donuts this morning. There's compulsive overeaters walking down the street. That doesn't seem to be a reason to come to a meeting. Here's what we have. We have, hopefully, we have compulsive overeaters who are not eating compulsively, and they are happy, joyous, and free in their release from the desire to do so. Very, very important. And when we talk about Bill Wilson's trajectory into recovery, when we get to Bill's story, we see some words that are very, very integral. It says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says this on page 12, it says, at long last I saw, I felt, I believed. What is he referring to that brings us back to what we just read? I saw. What did he see in Ebby? He saw recovery. Unfortunately, Ebby didn't keep it, but he saw recovery. He had been hospitalized twice before at Towns Hospital in New York City. He saw heavy drinkers, moderate drinkers, and alcoholics not drinking, but they weren't very happy about it. He saw in Ebby, because of a spiritual awakening as the result of the Oxford Group movement that Ebby was working at that time, he saw the happiness, the joy in Ebby that he was not drinking and he was happy about it. I saw, I felt. What did he feel? He felt hope based on what he saw in Ebby. I believed. What did he believe? He believed that God could and would if he were sought. So on page 12, we have a parallel to what we just read. You're here because there are compulsive overeaters here, hopefully, that are not eating and they are happy in their release. Let's continue. And if you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. I have to ask myself a question. Am I willing to do whatever it takes to recover? And this is not the first time that we're going to be faced with this question in this book. Let's move on. At some of these, we balked. We hesitated. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, what's earnestness another word for? It's a word for honesty. He just didn't want to keep using the same word over and over again, so he uses earnestness instead of this honesty concept that he's introduced to us in the first paragraph. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. What word is missing there? The word that's missing is perfect. Perfect. And this is where we bog down so much of the time. Bill Wilson, at the end of his life, knew well that we were perfectionistic, immature, sensitive rebels. Immature, perfectionistic, sensitive rebels, and that this was going to get in our way if we weren't careful. He says fearless and thorough. He does not say perfect. The only step I have to work perfectly is step number one. That's the only step I have to work perfectly. Excuse me. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. You know, I've heard a song that says, love is a river, love is a reed. Well, if love can be a river or love can be a reed or whatever the heck it is, then recovery is a vending machine. Now, that may seem weird unless you've been around me for a while, but here's my analogy. See, in a vending machine, if a product costs $2, When I was a kid, a product in a vending machine was a nickel or a dime. A dime was expensive. Almond Joy and Mounds bars were a dime. All the other candy was a nickel. Now that same candy might cost $4 or whatever the heck, I don't know. But anyway, recovery is a vending machine. So if I have something in the vending machine that I want, and I put in $1.99 in the vending machine, what am I going to get out of the vending machine? Garnished, nothing. I'll be lucky to get my $1.99 back, because that $1.99 does not equal $2. And so what we're seeing here is a picture that when it comes to recovery, boys and girls, I'm either in or I'm out. I'm either doing it or I'm not. There's no half measures here. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. Now, again, this is very important stuff. Half measures availed us nothing. It doesn't give me half a recovery. Gives me nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Now, we're not going to read through the 12 steps. What I'm going to do is I'm going to break the steps down in a way very quickly, because we're pushing time. I'm going to break them down as perhaps you've never seen them broken down before, and then we're going to move on. I'm going to take step one as admission. Step one is admission. Steps 2 through 7 is submission. Steps 8 and 9 are restitution. And steps 10, 11, and 12 are reconstruction. I'll do that one more time. I can see the hands waving. Step 1 is admission. Steps 2 through 7 is submission. Steps 8 and 9, restitution. And steps 10, 11, and 12 are reconstruction. Let's go to page 60. Many of us exclaim, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. What are the principles? The principles are the steps. He's not talking about thing. There was something that came out in the 80s, I think, 20 years after Bill was dead. The principle of this is honesty, and the principle of this is hope. And that's fine. I'm not knocking that. I'm not critical of that. But that's not what he's referring to. Okay. When he talks about the principles, he's talking about the steps. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. Here's the most misquoted, misunderstood part of the big book. It says the principles we have set down are guides to progress. Here's the most misunderstood sentence. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. This does not give us an excuse to eat Almond Joy bars. It doesn't give me an excuse to eat Girl Scout cookies. This is, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Doesn't mean I can eat cookies and say, "Oh, progress, not perfection." No, it doesn't mean that at all. It really doesn't. Our description of the alcoholic. What is our description of the alcoholic? Again, it's the doctor's opinion, chapters 1, 2, and 3. Those are all the chapters that concern themselves with step 1, the description of the alcoholic, the physical allergy, and the twist of the mind. The chapter to the agnostic, chapter 4. On our personal adventures, the stories in the back of the book, before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own life. What does it mean to be an alcoholic? What is the definition of an alcoholic? It is someone who has a twist of the mind to drive them into the food in search of relief from the untenable, intense, unrelenting, searing, debilitating pain of not eating. This is why we eat, because the sobriety, the abstinence is so totally uncomfortable that eating becomes preferable, and that food is never the problem. Food becomes the solution to the problem. Now, if food is the solution to the problem, what is the problem? The problem is the buildup of everyday, normal, human emotion. Clancy Imeslin, one of our great leaders from AA who passed away not long ago, he gives podcasts and he describes alcohol as the solution to his problem. And I learned this from Clancy. He says, if alcohol was the problem, then treatment centers would turn out winners, and they don't. And hospitals would turn out winners, and they don't. And jails would turn out winners, and they don't. The fear, the anger, the guilt, the shame, the happiness, all the various emotions that we feel as human beings become so uncomfortable for the compulsive overeater that the brain, in search of relief, will tell us to eat food. It never tells me to eat steamed broccoli. It never tells me to eat a hard-boiled egg. It tells me to eat cookies and candy and pasta and pizza. Why does it tell me to do that? Because in those foods is relief. Because those foods in me will not only give me an instant sense of ease and comfort that Dr. Silkworth calls the effect, but those foods will actually, for about 9-10 seconds, change my perception of reality. They will alter my perception of reality. The loneliness that I was feeling is now more bearable. You know, there's a famous movie called The Wizard of Oz. And in The Wizard of Oz, when Dorothy lands in Oz, the movie goes from sort of a sepia, gray, black and white. It's not really black nor white. It's sort of a gray, grayish tone. And then all of a sudden, she lands in Oz, and the movie is in deep, beautiful color. Oh, everything is just beautiful. That's what happens in my mind when I eat a Nestle's Crunch Bar. Everything goes from this gray, this sepia, this kind of dingy, dungy gray to beautiful color that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. I'm going to mention some names. If you're too young to know who these people are, you can Google them. Karen Carpenter, Mama Cass Elliott, John Candy, Chris Farley, Fatty Arbuckle, Oliver Hardy, and President William Howard Taft, to name a few. Now, these were people at the top of their game. These were people at the top of the heap. And they had all the things that a human being could want, and it didn't save them. It doesn't matter whether you're from Yale or jail. It doesn't matter whether you live on Park Avenue or under a park bench. It matters not if you're gay or straight or black or white or green or yellow or orange. It matters not whether you're Jewish or Catholic or Protestant or Muslim or Buddhist. It doesn't matter. This disease is an equal opportunity murderer. And this disease is so powerful, permanent, and progressive, that it tells us at the end of chapter 3, the very last part of chapter 3, it says on page 43 at the bottom, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. except in a few rare cases, which I've not seen in 44 years here, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. My disease is so powerful that the only power greater than my disease is a power also greater than I, that I choose to call God, but you can call it anything you want. There's no wrong answer. As long as you're believing or willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself, you are on your way. See that God could and would if he were sought. How do you seek God? What do you do? Well, the book is going to tell us, but I'm going to answer it in a very short way. Work the steps every day for the rest of your life like your hair's on fire, and you will be seeking God. And if you don't know where God is, look for him in the face of one of his children, and you will always find him. If you're looking for God, look for him in the face of one of his children. Dr. Bob, at the end of his life, said, here's the simplistic program. Trust God, clean house, help others. As long as you're doing those things, trust God, clean house, help others, you'll never go wrong. Let's continue. Being convinced, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The book is now going to give us the answer. The first requirement is a very key word here, is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I ask my sponsees all the time, are you convinced of that? Are you convinced that your life run on self-will is running into a wall? Now, some of the people that are listening to the sound of my voice, whether you're here, there's 151 of you here, or you're listening on a recording, I have to ask myself a question. Yes, there's parts of my life that are highly successful, but based on what I've seen, is my life livable based on my own self-will? I don't think so. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. You know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. So here we are. We're describing the defect of selfishness. And selfishness is a word that is used a little differently in 1939 than it is today. When we think of somebody that is selfish, if the 150 of us were on a Caribbean island and they airdrop some supplies, and I try to hoard those supplies for myself, and I try to take more than my fair share, people would say I'm very selfish, and they'd be right. But the word selfish in 1939 did concern itself with that, but it is also the script that we have in our heads. Because I have a script, and I want you to stick to my script. And I want that lady over there to stick to my script. That man over there, I want him to stick to my script. Those people over there, and everybody has to stick to my script. Well, I find out later on, no, they don't. No, they don't. Let's continue. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So we learn how to manipulate as children. We learn to lie. We learn how to kiss butt. We learn how to kick butt. We learn how to give people the cold shoulder until they come around to our way of thinking. We learn how to manipulate. We learn how to push buttons in other people. And we hone that skill to a very, very high degree. We become masters at it. We are liars and master manipulators as compulsive overeaters. What usually happens? Now we're going to describe the defect of self-seeking. And just so I can head this off, the difference between selfish and self-seeking is this. In selfish, I have a script I want you to stick to. In self-seeking, I have the actions that I'm going to take to get you to stick to my script. And that's very important as well. I want you to stick to my script. And that, so, okay, page 61, we're in the middle of page 61. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, here's the key. He is sure that other people are more to blame. What are the four things? Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. What are the four things that all addicted people do as naturally as they breathe? They lie to themselves and others. They assign blame. Put a pin in that one. They keep score in their relationships, and they fight battles that just don't exist. So the second one, they assign blame. Very important. We love to blame other people. If they hadn't have done that to me, then I wouldn't be eating. I wouldn't be aggravated, and I wouldn't have troubles in my life. I blamed my mother for everything that went wrong in my life, and some of you blamed God. I did too, and I blamed other people, but other people are more to blame. Ooh, that's a tempting one. We love that one. Blame others? I'm in. Okay. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker? There's that self-seeking reference I was telling you about, because the selfishness is the first paragraph. Self-seeking is the second one. Selfish is the script. Self-seeking are the actions we take to get people to stick to our script. So he's giving us a breakdown of the character defects that we're going to be dealing with in step four. So he's explaining to us what they are. Any good textbook does that, and this is a really good textbook. Even when trying to be kind, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? And how many of us have spent decades of our life, I'll give you a Yiddish expression, schlug kop in wand. We have spent decades schlug kop in wand, meaning hitting your head against the wall to try to get people in our life to stick to our script, thinking this thought that if only he would stop drinking, if only she would do whatever, stop picking her nose, whatever, if only they would, then everything would be okay. And the truth is, it's not. Because we are bottomless pits of demand. Bottomless pits of demand. Is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I've noticed this in my life. The more I put my hands on a situation, the worse it gets. And oftentimes the best thing I can do about something is nothing. Oftentimes in my life, my God has shown me hands off. And the more I try to manipulate and the more I try to do, the worse of a quagmire my life becomes. Or after is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? And we are self-centered, selfish people. We are concerned with ourselves. Let's take a look at something that's very, very important, and it's not something people usually look at. This is part of something called Appendix 3, and it was written by a very, very great person, and it says on page 570 of the fourth edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Dr. Bauer, who was broadcasting under the auspices of the American Medical Association in 1946, he says in part, Alcoholics Anonymous are no crusaders, not a temperance society. They know that they must never drink. They help others with similar problems. In this atmosphere, the alcoholic often overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself. This is very important. He overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself. Learning to depend upon a higher power and absorb himself in his work with other alcoholics, he remains sober day by day. The days add up to weeks, the weeks into months and years. That's in Appendix 3. Let's go back to page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. We make ourselves targets by trying to manipulate others. They see through us, as clever as we think we are, as cunning and smart as we think we are, they see right through us and they strike back. Seemingly is the key. Seemingly without provocation. But of course we have provoked them, have we not? Let's continue. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Very important. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. How does it kill us? By driving us incessantly into the food. By driving us into the food in search of relief from the pain and the guilt and the shame and the remorse and the fear and the emotions that build when we are trying to not just live, but to tell others how to live and to manipulate others, which cannot be done successfully. God makes that possible. See, that's a very important line. God makes that possible. I can't make that possible. I can't do that on my own. I can no more do that on my own than I could stop eating pizza. God makes that possible. See, the book isn't going to tell us how to stop manipulating people. The book isn't going to tell us how to not be selfish and self-seeking. It's going to unleash that power through the working of the steps. That's a very important concept. And so many of us, when we come into OA, we're trying to bring our dieting skills into the program. And not only do we want to force ourselves not to eat through unaided willpower, we want to force ourselves to be better people through willpower. We are not trying to be better people. We are not bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. God makes that possible. Stop looking for ways to manage your life and manage the world. It's not there. It's not going to happen. God makes that possible. Very important. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. A repetition of what he just told you. But when Bill Wilson, in his infinite wisdom, and I don't believe Bill wrote the book, I believe he penned the book, I believe God wrote this book. Why do I believe that? Because this book and its contents have restored more addicts, more alcoholics, more gamblers, more sex addicts, love addicts, more internet addicts, more porn addicts, more smokers, more what have you, back to society, back to a life than all other methods combined. It is one of the greatest pieces of spiritual literature ever written. Bill Wilson was 43 years old at the time, with 3.5 years of sobriety. I have 24 years of sobriety. I'm 68 years old. I'm lucky if half the time I can knock out a coherent text message, let alone one of the greatest pieces of spiritual literature that the world has ever seen. Was he qualified to write such a book? No. Was he a spiritual giant? No. Was he a theologian? No. But I believe that God took Bill's hand and with a little input from Fitzmaio and some from Hank Parkhurst that Bill discarded and Hank wrote to employers, I believe that with input from Jimmy Burwell and input from different the Oxford group, certainly. And there were four books that helped frame the book. There was the varieties of religious experience that we talked about. There is the Common Sense of Drinking by Richard Peabody, who died of his own alcoholism in 1936, not more than, you know, a little piece of time away from meetings of AA that were going on. The Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. And what am I missing here? Hold on. I know what I'm missing, but I'm getting a little fablunges here. I'm missing one of them. The varieties of religious experience, Sermon on the Mount, William James, the varieties of religious experience. Oh, and the book of James, New Testament. The book of James, New Testament. I knew I had it written here somewhere. The book of James, New Testament. I should know that, but sometimes I get fablunged. Okay. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Very important. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore. What does he mean by moral? He means truthful. Moral is truthful. Not moral as opposed to immoral. Moral being truthful. But we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centered as much by wishing or trying on our own will, our own power. We had to have God's help. That's three times Three times in a paragraph, he is explaining to us to stop trying to manage our lives and the lives of those around us. Three times. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. That's four times. It didn't work. Next, that means immediately following. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. Let's stop right there, because a lot of people may not know what that means. If I am the principal, if I'm selling my home and I hire a realtor to list and sell my home, I am the principal and the realtor is the agent. He has a fiduciary duty. That's a fun word to say, fiduciary. What does that mean? What's fiduciary? It means he is obligated by Arizona law to put the needs of me, the principal, above his own. That's what that means, fiduciary. He is the agent and I am the principal. But when it comes to living our lives in recovery, God is the principal and I am the agent. I'm here to represent God. I am going to do what St. Francis of Assisi told me to do. He says, go out and preach the gospel, and if you must, use words. I'm going to do the best I can today, Sunday, March 5th, 2023, to exemplify recovery in the things I say and the things I do and the places that I go. I am going to be the agent. God is the principal. He is the father. We are his children. Now, I know that some of you may have had fathers that were poopy heads. I get that. But this is the perfect Father. This is the heavenly Father. This is God. We are his children. He is the Father. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Now, the top of 63, we're going to have to move our fannies here. These are the third step promises on the top of page 63. These are beautiful promises, and they are the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, what position is that? The one we just talked about, where he is the father, we are his children, he is the principal, we are his agent. Based on that, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Doctors have been writing my death warrant from the time I was 8, 9 years old. When I was 9 years old and John Kennedy was the president of the United States, my mother started screaming at Dr. Jacobson. Dr. Jacobson started screaming at my mother, and I was on heavy duty amphetamines at age 9. Because I had to do something about my weight. I'm alive. If I make it to May, I'm going to be 69 years old. I have been told by doctors my entire life, you are not going to live long. I walked 3 miles this morning without stopping. I'm alive. I function. I have a life. It's not perfect. It's not everything I'd want it to be. Yeah, I'd make some changes. Man, I wish I had a time machine. I'd go back to 1954, and with what I know now, man, would I do things differently. But I'm alive. We had a new employer. Notice that employer is capitalized. God is the employer. Being all powerful, we're going to run over time here, Claire. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. Does that sound familiar? Because we've been talking about it the entire chapter. Less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. That's so foreign to my nature. Yes, I'll give you a dime. Make sure you give me $82 before I surrender the dime. I'll go quid pro quo with you. you do this and I'll do that. But then, now I can't do that. I have to give with no expectation of a return. That's what Dr. Silkworth calls altruism. And that comes into our lives through the Oxford Group Movement. Oxford Group Movement was led by Frank Buchman. Buchman was a Lutheran minister. He wanted people to return to first century Christianity. And he went to China on a mission after establishing a church in London near Oxford University. That's where they got the name. And when he went to China, he saw people that had an enthusiasm for Christ. Enthusiasm, very important. And theos from the Greek, and theos from God. Enthusiasm from God, entheos. And he saw what was working in China was altruism, people giving with no expectation of a return. We say it all the time in OA, we're not in the results business, we're not in the results business. Where does that come from? It comes from Frank Buchman. It comes from the Oxford Group Movement. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, when I'm not trying to run the world, I have some peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, capital, that's God, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. The only similarity between me and that little boy that was on diet pills in 1963, the summer of 63, I have the same name as him. I have the same mom and dad as him. I have the same history as him. And that's where the similarities end. He was selfish, angry. I'm not that person anymore. Could I have affected that kind of change? Not on your life. I had to have God's help. This feels so much better. Let's continue. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now let's clear up a myth in the final minute here. How long should step three take? 30 seconds to utter the prayer. If it takes longer than that, you're doing it incorrectly. There's no written assignment here. You're not turning anything over to anybody in step three. You're making a decision to do so. In step three, we are not turning anything over to anyone. Step three is at its essence a decision to do what? To do 4 through 12. How do I know you've taken step three? When you have a pencil and a paper in your hand and you're going down the first column of your resentments. That's how I know you've done step three. The written assignments are in step 4, 8, and sometimes 9. That's it. You don't have to read any other books to take step three. What is the prayer that we read? What does it boil down to? What is the bondage of self? It's the defects of character. Defects of character. You don't have to make a list of them. Here's the defects of character. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, anger, fear. 5, done. Yelling at your wife is not a defect of character. Being late for work is not a defect of character. Perfectionism is not a defect of character. These are behaviors that stem from defects of character. So again, step three is basically a decision to do steps 4 through 12 every day for the rest of your life. Now, when you do 10, 11, and 12, you're doing 4 through 12. So people say, well, I have to do a 4-step every day. We found it very desirable to take a spiritual step with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, but it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. That's all I could spit out in an hour. I'm sorry we didn't even come close to finishing the chapter, but all right.
Put your questions in the Q&A, and I will ask them, and we'll do our best to get as many as we can done, and then there's no rush here. There's lots of opportunities for recovery in OA, so you just keep coming back. How does one differentiate between doing my part, which the mind can say is HP's will, and doing God's will?
Well, when it's my part, it's usually in all capital letters with exclamation points. I want this. I want her. I want it. I want them to stick to my script. Or I want something. And when it's God's will, it's quiet. Small letters, very subtle. It just feels right. When I have to sell myself on taking an action, that's usually an indication that it's my will. When it just feels organic, it feels natural, it feels good, I sense I'm going downhill, downstream, then I know it's God's will. I pray this prayer all the time. God, bless it or block it. Bless it or block it. And that's how I know.
So there were a couple of requests to please repeat the 5 defects again.
5 defects of character are selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, resentment, and fear. There's not 87 defects of character. There's not 400 defects of character. That's it. These other behaviors stem from these defects of character. I'm here representing Vision, so that's it. Or Zoom.
Okay, I need some help on this one. What language is this?
Mine is English with a little Yiddish.
Okay, well, mine is, my mother's was Yiddish, not me, though.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so here we go.
We can seek outside help for emotional problems, other problems.
Bill was in therapy his entire life. He suffered from anxiety and he suffered from depression his entire life. But whether or not somebody's neurotic or whether or not somebody very specifically needs A, B, or C, I'm not going to venture any opinion on that at all whatsoever.
How do you guide someone whose HP may not be Christian-based?
I couldn't care less if it's Christian-based, Jewish-based, or anything. All that's required is, do you believe or are you willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself? As long as you believe that there is a power greater than yourself, now we can do business. I couldn't care less whether you're a Christian or what you are or what you're not, doesn't enter into it at all.
I'm going to check the chat if there's any other additional questions or other questions. Someone just asked, what are the 2 first words for sensitive rebel? Did you say something?
We are perfection. We are immature, sensitive, perfectionist rebels. We are immature, perfectionistic, sensitive rebels.
Okay.
The original language of the big book was imperative rather than declarative. And it was Dr. Howard in New Jersey that came to Bill after seeing a multilith copy that's a mimeograph copy of the book. And he went to Bill Wilson and he implored Bill to make changes in the book, let's look at, to answer that question, let's look at one of the original copies of the steps. Listen to the language and see if you can tell the changes. Step one, admit you are powerless over alcohol, that your life has become unmanageable. See the difference? Come to believe that God could restore you to sanity. Surrender your will and life over to the care and direction of God. So you have an iteration of the steps where Bill is writing in the imperative rather than the declarative. What's the difference? Imperative is you do this and you do that. See chapter 7? Chapter 7 of our book is in the imperative. Do this, say this, say that. The declarative is we admitted we were powerless over food. In other words, here's what we did, past tense, in keeping with Dr. Howard imploring on Bill that an alcoholic is not going to respond to being told what to do. And you see it everywhere. But, and you know, my favorite is step 7. I'll just do this one and then we'll let this go. Humbly on your knees, ask God to remove your shortcomings, holding nothing back. Alcoholics are not going to respond to this. Is from the writing of the big book. But the bottom line is we have a situation where we are very sensitive, immature, perfectionistic rebels. So we have to make sure we keep that in mind when we're sponsoring, when we're dealing with each other. Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, so we've got a bunch more questions.
Okay.
Okay, let's see what we got here. So how do you work on your character defects?
You do the steps every day like your hair's on fire, and that's how you do it. Do the steps.
Someone wants to learn more about meditation. Can you speak to your meditation practice?
You can work on meditation in a lot of different ways, and they don't necessarily limit, you know, to to OA or the book. You can do that in many, many various ways. You can seek out a clergy person. You can seek out a yoga master, you can seek out whatever, but there's other opportunities out there for you to perfect and enlarge your meditation life.
Okay, someone wants you to speak more about Hank in 2 minutes or less.
I don't know that I can speak on Hank Parkhurst in 2 minutes or less, but here is what I will tell you. Much more so at the very beginning, he was a co-founder of AA. If it wasn't for Hank Parkhurst, this book would not be here today. Hank Parkhurst was Bill's right-hand man. And Hank Parkhurst, had he stayed sober, would probably be recognized today as the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hank wanted a book that was more psychological in nature. He did not want a religious book. He bucked against this idea of God. The only chapter in the book not mentioning God is Two Employers, which is the chapter that Hank wrote. But Hank was a master salesman, and he knew how to try to get money from the Rockefellers and try to get money. Most of that stuff produced nothing. But here's what Hank did in 2 minutes or less. He filled Bill with a lot of optimism when optimism was at a premium. Let's remember, this is the height of the Depression. These guys didn't have a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out of. And he kept Bill going. He was instrumental in the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous self-published this book. Bill was very set to sell this to a publisher. And Hank convinced him that if they're willing to pay us a royalty for this book, hell with them, let's keep it. And if Hank hadn't have been there to convince Bill of this, we wouldn't have this book today, because it would have been in the hands of a publisher that could have changed it, discontinued it, re-edited it to their own liking, and it would not be as effective as it is today. Hank Parkhurst is a character well worth studying. He did die drunk. He did go back to drinking in September of 35, just a mere 5 months after the book was printed. And he was sort of a sardonic kind of guy. He had flaming red hair. Girls were... Okay. We'll take up Hank Parkhurst another time. He is a character well worth studying, and we've got a lot of information on him. Okay, go ahead to the next one. Sorry.
Okay. Explain the difference between the meaning of selfish when the book was written in the
1930s. Oh, I knew that was coming. All right. And self-seeking, selfish and self-seeking? Okay. Selfish is the script that you have, that you want people to stick to your script. Self-seeking is the action that you take to get them to do so.
Someone asked another question about selfish, which is, why did you list selfish and self-seeking as two separate characters in the text?
Because they're treated as such in this chapter. Now, self-seeking is not mentioned on page 84 for step 10, but selfish and self-seeking are definitely two different defects of character as it relates to step 4 in chapter 5.
Someone asked that you wrote down selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear. What is the fifth?
Selfish, self-seeking, resentment, dishonesty, and fear.
How do you define your abstinence?
Abstinence is defined by Overeaters Anonymous as abstaining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. Okay.
Sorry. She's asking, okay. How does Harlan do his step 10?
I do it according to page 84 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I do it. I'm in the minority from what I see every day of my life, but I'm from Chicago, and if you've ever seen the movie The Goodbye Girl with Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason, Richard Dreyfuss says, I'm from Chicago, we just do the play as written. I'm very meat and potatoes. I'm from the middle of the country, and we just do it according to page 84. Let's take a look at it, and it gives you the instruction. Every time I do a step 10, I do not have to do a step 4. It tells me from time to time to do step 4, but let's go over here. It says here, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So it says continue because In 10, we continue. In 11, we improve. In 12, we practice. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Very simple instructions. There should be no question. A baby could do what they're telling you to do. We discuss them with someone immediately. Doesn't say email. Doesn't say text. Doesn't say that. It doesn't say this is something we do at night and in the morning. It's an as-needed prescription throughout the day. Do not confuse 10 with 11, okay? We discuss it with someone immediately. I work too. I have obligations too. You found the time to eat. You found the time to do crazy things. You find that 1 minute to do your 10th step with somebody who's informed yet not involved. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Do that. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Let's take one more look at what we just said because it's so simple. See? It's so simple that we in Overeaters Anonymous are madly in love with overcomplicating everything. We want to, more is better. It's a simple process of a step. Simple, easy, quick. Very simple. Let's take a look at something, though, and then we'll get right back to the questions. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. What step did we use to deal with them? Step 4. When these things crop up, we ask God at once to remove them, 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately, 5. Then we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, 8 and 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, 12.
Down, please.
12. And that's how we do step 10. Quick, easy, to the big book.
I did my
the other way I do it, I'm not familiar with.
Okay, someone asked what language it's in, so one of you know what it's in.
Yeah.
It is French, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. But before that, someone asked, how do you know so much history? Like, what did you read to, or learn to know?
What didn't I read? I read everything that's out there. If it's a history, if it's a biography, if it's whatever it is, I devour it.
We're going to leave it without that mentioning anything specific because it's not OA approved literature, but I'm sure you could contact Harlan directly.
Yes.
Okay. Can you ask that question? Is there a question there?
Oh, I thought it was finished. Okay. Yeah, the question is that she's new in the program and her character defaults are coming all up. And she's really perfectionist and she's trying to figure out how do we make the difference between defects of character and really being true to what she feels is acceptable or not from the from other people's comportement actions.
I don't understand the question.
She's trying to figure out where is she being her character defaults versus what she really truly believes as people being endless Okay.
You have to divorce yourself from what anyone else is thinking or doing. That has nothing to do with you. You have to completely divorce yourself from anything they're thinking or saying or doing. And you have to work your program. You have to work your program. Eyes on your own paper. Stay in your hula hoop. Do not go out of your hula hoop. All right. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's knock it off with a good one. Let's make it a good one.
I got this one.
Saying that she's always going back to fear and.
Well, for fear, we have step 10. If you're not on step 10, work
God, your steps. What she has to do.
Work the steps. Keep the food down. Work the steps. Get to 10 and 12 very, very quickly. The faster you work the steps, the more effective the process.
There was a question in the chat about, can you share why when we relapse you suggest looking at step 2 and 10?
I didn't say when we relapse. I said always look at 2 and 10. They are the most underutilized steps. You have to continue to work with, you have to continue to develop a relationship with your higher power that is ever changing. As life changes, and it does, you have to develop that relationship. And then 10, you're usually not doing 10s. But if you're in relapse, you're back on step 1, but you have to review steps 2 and 10.
But we really thank Harlan. We thank all of you for being here. We thank our service teams, especially our interpreters who are heroic as far as I'm concerned today.
Yeah, wonderful. I put them to the test.
Remind everyone what you see here, what you hear here, when you meet here, please let it stay here. And that the opinions expressed here today are not those of OA as a whole. They represent each individual here. You know, take what you like and leave the rest. And everyone, you just please keep coming back to the miracle happens. That's all I want to say to everybody. Because it will. And I love you. And I'm going to end the interpretation now.